Hello and welcome to the Interfish Podcast, where we bring you the most interesting and compelling seafood news. I'm Editor-in-Chief Drew Cherry, joined today by Executive Editor John Fiorillo, Senior Business Reporter Rachel Sapin, and Correspondent John Evans. Just time for a couple of topics today. It has been another very, very busy news week. We're going to start today with the supply chain logistics. It's a topic that we write more and more about nowadays because the complexities are taking their toll on the seafood industry, no matter what species you're selling and no matter what you're doing along the value chain. So, John, you track this closer than anybody else. Why don't you tell us about where we stand vis-a-vis China? China does have a couple of big events coming up, their New Year, of course, and also the Olympics, which have added an additional stress or two on already complicated complicated situation for logistics in China, where their zero COVID policy has resulted in a lot of companies being turned away or facing delays in their key ports of Dalian and Qingdao in particular. But this week, an HSBC report came out. Tell us about it.
Yeah, and as we've seen, the Omicron variant of COVID-19 has been spreading rapidly across Europe and North America, and now down here in Brazil where I am. And the fear is, as you mentioned, economists at HSBC Bank, if it spreads rapidly across Asia, then it could cause the, as they put it, the mother of all supply chain stumbles. And there's even fears from one commentator that I spoke to, Denis Unkevich, who's a global trade expert, and he's written on the transformation of the global supply chains. We could be repeating the cycle we saw at the start of 2020, when first of all there were problems in Asia, and then they spread particularly in terms of shipping as well as the impact on processing. They could spread back to Europe and then North America. So that's a sort of doomsday scenario. They'll be hoping to avoid that. And as you mentioned, the couple of events with the Chinese New Year, which is one of the biggest mass migrations of people going back to their regions where they previously came from for holidays. And then the Olympic Games, Winter Olympic Games, that is. And of course, now since we wrote our piece, the Chinese government has said it's not going to be selling tickets for the event. I think only a few people will be allowed into the event, spectators, that is. And that's under strict quarantine rules. I'm not sure what the period is, whether it's 7 or 10 days before the event they're allowed in. So whether that's going to be as worrying an event as feared, we'll have to see. But if it all goes badly in terms of the Omicron variant, then it doesn't look good. Although we are seeing, in South Africa and other places, rates linked to the Omicron variant or COVID cases falling.
Yeah, China is obviously had a full few years of these types of closures on and off, and the rules and restrictions have been relatively tight, particularly as we talked about in the ports. The interesting statistics came out about 2021. From Russia, our correspondent Evgeny Vovchenko wrote this story. New statistics showed that Russia's seafood exports to China, China has been far and away Russia's most important seafood market, primarily as a reprocessing destination, but also as a market. Their exports fell 70%. So they used to be over 1 million metric tons, down to around 310,000 metric tons last year. It's just stunning. The numbers involved there are just absolutely stunning. And I think other countries are probably looking at this same shift. Russia, on the opposite side of that, exports to Germany, to the United Kingdom, to other areas in Southeast Asia, just shot through the roof, Africa as well. And so they found new markets for this fish. The trade shows, or trade flows rather, have completely changed. And they may stay this way, even after COVID fades in the rearview mirror. But John, that's another issue that we've been looking at, and that's being discussed, is kind of who is the new China. So that's kind of next on your reporting agenda, as we'll be looking into that as well. Yes.
Yeah, and Denis Ogovich, as I mentioned earlier, he in his book Transforming the Global Supply Chain, and he also told The Guardian beforehand as well, before speaking to me, he repeated it to me, that he doesn't see the mold has been broken now. He doesn't see China holding on to its prominent position as the world's processing center. He says that some, as you mentioned, flows are going back to other parts of the world, including South America and North America. Manufacturing, that is. Manufacturing, I should say. Manufacturing operations.
Right. The reshoring and increased automation, all these things that we've been seeing moving, it's going to move even quicker. And even though China's ports have opened up a bit more to Russia, again, just like you're saying, John, the cow's kind of out of the barn, where they're deciding, hey, we can ship direct to markets. Already Russia was focusing more on doing its own value-added production in country anyway. And I think we will see more of it as time goes on. Let's move to another big story we worked on this week. Rachel Sapin, fantastic job looking into a project, I guess we almost difficult to call it a company, a project plan for Maine, a land-based salmon farming project. Now, land-based aquaculture and aquaculture development in general has found a welcome home in Maine in general. Of course, there's always opponents and there's always battles here and there. But in general, the state of Maine and the cities in Maine have been open to these operations that are going to bring jobs to some of these rural communities. Whole Oceans is one of those companies that's been planning a project for a long, long time. Rachel, we decided to check in. What did you find in your reporting?
Well, unfortunately for Whole Oceans, not a lot in terms of progress they've made since 2018. The story really ended up being about how this company kind of came on the scene in 2018, and it came to a small town in Maine, in rural Maine, called Bucksport. And this town has like less than 5,000 residents, and they made this big announcement, Whole Oceans, in 2018, that they were going to build a huge salmon, land-based salmon operation that was, going to invest more than $250 million into the town and create hundreds of jobs. And it was supported by people like Maine Senator Susan Collins. And now we're like about 4 years and 3 CEOs later, and it's just a big empty lot. This company's been sitting on permits. It has received quite a bit of support from the town and the state of Maine, and everyone's just a little confused why the company hasn't moved forward on anything at this point. We're all pretty in the dark.
Right, and it's kind of unclear too. And this is the larger question about land-based salmon farming projects, is the financing. Because there's so much excitement and enthusiasm among the investment community for land-based aquaculture, there have been a lot of projects that we've reported on. A lot of times it's just an idea, it's a plan, it's a PowerPoint. So what do we know about Whole Oceans, kind of about their backers? There's a company called Emergent Holdings that's been kind of on top of it. and they've been involved in some other companies as well.
Yeah, we know a little bit about Emergent Holdings. They are a private company, and they're not filing with the Securities and Exchange Commission. So we don't quite know what the ownership structure is in Emergent Holdings. We do know that Rob Piazza was one of the co-founders of Emergent Holdings, and he was initially involved in the whole Oceans project in 2018. He did end up leaving that project, so he's no longer with it, according to his LinkedIn, at least. We did try reaching out to him. We do know that Emergent Holdings, it is also financing a land-based salmon project called Kutera in British Columbia. And that is a project where the site for it is actually leased to Emergent Holdings through the First Nation, the Namgis First Nation. So we do know they're involved in that project. And we also know that Emergent Holdings finances a aquaculture technology group called PR Aqua that also operates out of British Columbia. We've been trying to get a better sense of who is behind Emergent Holdings. We've reached out to the company. We haven't really been able to get those details yet. So far, we've just heard from their kind of PR person on behalf of the whole Oceans project that there are big announcements coming for Maine and to stand by. But so far, even talking to some of the construction companies and town code enforcement officers and project managers in Bucksport, no one really knows what that announcement's going to be. So it's really put the town in a pretty nervous, anxious spot for what's going to happen for this, you know, around 100-acre site that they were really hoping this land-based salmon farm would be inhabiting at this point.
Right. We reached out to Emergent. Just to give you a sense of kind of where, how confusing all this is. Emergent, the post office box goes of the address is the same as Whole Oceans. And then the phone number listed on the on Emergent Holdings is actually a zip code based in Indiana. So it's confusing. And the person that answered the phone there said she was no longer with the company and left in September 2021. And that they're, she indicated that several other people had left as well. And the spokesperson did, Rachel, say that they're could be news coming up eventually, somehow, somewhere?
Yeah, she said that there is a big announcement for Whole Oceans happening in the first quarter of this year. I guess we're not to the end of the first quarter, so there's still some time for that announcement. But it's been tough for the town of Bucksport because Whole Oceans has been permitted for a while now to actually start building at least, you know, its initial site. And when I was talking to Luke Chiavelli, who's their Bucksport's code enforcement officer, he explained that they haven't given the town any plans and that they could even be doing things like removing 350,000 yards of material at the moment. This used to be an old lumber or an old mill site. So it's got lots of removal work that needs to be done. And they just have a lot of permission to start working on the site. But it's been kind of very radio silent for the town since about, the fall of last year when Luke Chiavelli, the code enforcement officer, said he had learned about people leaving the company. So it's really a very in the dark project. One person I spoke with that works with Chiambro Construction in Maine called the project a black hole. So it's hard. It's really hard to know what's going on. And in general, it's just, you know, I also kind of heard from a construction company that works with a lot of the projects, not only Whole Oceans, but bigger ones like Nordic Aqua Farms and American Aqua Farms, that these projects are just very costly and that Whole Oceans is not the only company kind of dealing with budget issues at the moment. It's hard for, you know, the people that are supporting land-based aquaculture in Maine. They do want to see these projects get off the ground. I think they just, you know, they're not sure how the companies are making it work at this point. We've had, you know, so many companies announcing these very broad plans, broad and, you know, amazing plans for salmon farms in Maine. And it's going on 4 years and none of the projects have been realized, not only Whole Oceans, but Nordic Aqua Farms. Yeah, so it's tough.
I mean, I think that sticker shock is one of the big holdups. And I think now that the industry does have awareness, not just in Maine, but everywhere, as a kind of an exciting investment, now it's sort of, I think, separating out the projects that have a real potential and the projects that were just the idea. But when you have a $250 million project, that money does have to come from somewhere. You need some massive backing to have that kind of outlay of cash, because you have to, and then somebody taking a lot of risk, because you're going to build a facility, you have to buy the smolt, you have to hire the staff, all the equipment, all the design. I mean, tens upon tens of millions of dollars to get it started. And that's to take the gamble that 18 months later, you're going to have fully grown out salmon, and that buyers will actually pay for it. So intense amount of risk for a lot of these projects. So permitting, hard as it is only one step. You have to have people that are willing to pay the money and take the risks. And as of now, there's really very few people that are willing to do that on the larger size projects. Outside of in Norway, and Norway, Norwegian companies have found that that raising money on the stock exchange is the best way to do that, and have had some luck with that. Obviously, Atlantic Sapphire. Bit of news on that front in terms of the size of these companies. This week, Salmon Evolution, stock listed on the Oslo Stock Exchange, as Atlantic Sapphire is. Salmon Evolution is doing a flow-through project in Norway, outside of a city called Molde, and they are now the most valuable land-based salmon farmer in the world. Just as of yesterday, on a 30% share run, our colleague Anders Furuset reported that they now are worth $375 million, which is a whole lot of money. But I think a lot of it now is actually investors trying to gauge whether or not these projects are for real and close to realization. Obviously, Atlantic Sapphire is well into its construction and actually raising fish, has all kinds of problems, but it's raising fish. Salmon Evolution just got seawater into its tanks, which is a big milestone. And then in addition, Salmon Evolution has equity investors, Cargill, one of the world's largest private companies, plenty of money, and also the largest or second largest aquaculture feed producer. So you have one big stable leg there. And then you also have Dongwon, which is a massive Korean company with not only seafood and food and beverage, but all kinds of other assets. And they have invested in Salmon Evolution. And also Salmon Evolution has contracted to build a massive land-based salmon farm in South Korea with Dongwon, called K-Smart Farm. So, yeah, it does seem a bit like the projects that are potentially not as baked out are starting to fall by the wayside. John, what are your thoughts on all of these projects? Are we at that stage where the wheat is getting separated from the chaff? Is that your takeaway from the Whole Oceans sort of silence?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the continuum of this explosion of RAS salmon facilities, especially in the U.S., you know, a few years ago, not many, five, six, four, somewhere in that range, you know, projects were coming left and right. We couldn't keep up writing about them and their projects. And I remember one of our colleagues in Norway saying, you know, they're basically PowerPoint slides. And a lot of them were. They were grand plans that needed funding and needed management and all those things to make them reality. Nothing wrong with that. 4 years later, 5 years later, now we see that the leader, Atlantic Sapphire, went out there and they actually, you know, built the place and cut the management team and raised fish, but they didn't do it without a lot of bumps in the road. So investors seeing that, I think, pulled back from their exuberance and said, hold on. If these guys are struggling, you know, what's the one we put our money into? Are they going to be okay? And I think you're seeing now kind of the result of that. I don't know how much Whole Oceans has as far as funding. My sense is it's probably not sufficient, and I do know they lost some funding along the line. So, I think we're exactly where we probably should be with this. We're at the point where all these projects sounded great, looked wonderful, had all the promise, but after some development and after some further scrutiny, investors are, as you said, they're high grading now. They're like, whoa, you know, I don't know. That management team has been switched 7 times in the last 4 years. That's not a good sign. Let's take our money and put it over here. So that's all good news for Sapphire, if you ask me, because, Rachel said there's four land-based projects in Maine right now, and none of them are anywhere really. I mean, they've been permitted, but there's no fishing tanks. Most of them aren't even, I don't even think the construction has started in a lot of them, or in several of them. And, you know, some of them are dealing with significant blowback from residents. So there's a lot of obstacles, and I really feel bad about this because I was so excited. I love Maine, you know. I worked in that region a little bit. I was so excited to see, you know, these remote parts of Maine getting this new industry coming to. I thought, wow, this is going to be really cool. This is really unique. And as Rachel said, the local and state governments have bent over backwards to roll out the red carpet and help and, you know, kind of move this thing along. And now it looks like, you know, what will we get out of Maine? What will that industry develop, if at all, into, you know? So I find it a little sad. I hope it's just a bump in the road for all these guys, but my sense is that it isn't.
I think that there's going to be plenty of other companies that will make it work. And there's no question that there is money to be invested in land-based projects. It's going to grow. It's just kind of how long and which ones are going to make it. But I agree with you. It is a shame that these regions get so excited about it. The promise of jobs, and you know, when projects like this fail, it's a very sad thing. But a nickel's worth of free advice, you know, the management is so crucial, and I think that has been really overlooked as the absolute biggest shortfall and the biggest weakness in the ambitions for land-based aquaculture. There's just not enough trained people that know how to actually do this. And so when you look at the management teams for some of these projects, if none of them have ever worked for MUVI or Cermaq or Grieg or Aquachile or Tassal or any name that you can think of in salmon farming, caveat emptor, maybe they don't actually know how to build raise market salmon. Let's sort of look ahead here. Rachel, is there any sense of where things go next here? We haven't really moved into this phase of the reporting, but Coterra, I guess, question mark over what happens next for that project if Whole Oceans is stalled.
Yeah, that's definitely the next question is what happens with Coterra, what's going on with PR Aqua. I think Whole Oceans, this story really led us to more questions than answers at this point. And I know we're not the only ones that want those answers. So yes, that will be probably the next phase of the reporting for us. But yeah, and hopefully we will have a few more details coming up on who is behind the mysterious emergent holdings as well.
Well, it's not for lack of your reporting and trying to get people to respond and give us information on this. So I think probably every phone number in America has been called by you about this project. So I think we'll learn more in the coming days as we figure out exactly what's gone on with the company behind it. But as of now, certainly very, very, very quiet. So, okay, folks, we'll wrap it up there. A couple of quick things to plug. On February 17th, we have a digital event on shipping and logistics with some great panelists that we've got together. As I said at the top when we were speaking with John Evans, it's just a massive issue that the industry is trying to wrap its head around. So we want some clarity on it. We've got some executives with Maersk, the shipping line, with Nordic Group in Norway, FOA and Sons, which does maritime insurance, and more. So we're really looking forward to that event. Again, that's February 17th. And of course, the Boston Seafood Show is coming up on March 13th through 15th. We've reported that there are some companies that will not be attending, have chosen to not exhibit over concerns around COVID and the Omicron variant spread. We absolutely respect that decision. We will be there. We will have an event on Tuesday, March 14th, that will require vaccination, proof of vaccination, just as is the case for the Boston event itself at the Heinz Center. So unless there's any major changes, we plan on being there. We're going to have a great lineup of speakers who will be safely assembled and our tables and places for attendees will be nice and spaced out as well. So fingers crossed that everything is going to go normal for the Boston Seafood Show and that we will all be seeing one another in a safe fashion. All right, folks, we'll talk to you next week.